I want you to just imagine for a second that you are standing on a massive, just sprawling beach, and your objective for the day is to find one very specific, mathematically unique grain of sand.
Sounds like a nightmare, honestly.
Right. Because if you approach this like a standard modern digital computer, your methodology is just incredibly bleak. You get down on your hands and knees, you pick up a grain, evaluate it, put it down, and then, move to the next, just one by one.
Which is basically a combinatorial search. You're practically guaranteeing an agonizingly slow process.
Exactly. It's the ultimate brute force inefficiency. And it's exactly the wall we are hitting today with, Moore's law and standard algorithmic complexity. And here's the thought experiment for you listening. What if you didn't have to pick up the sand at all?
Oh, I like where this is going.
What if instead you could just flood that entire beach with a huge wave of water and then simply observe the fluid dynamics? You just watch where the currents naturally pool, where they create standing waves, where they spiral. The physical properties of the water literally do the calculation for you.
Instantly mapping the hidden geometry of the beach, right? Without counting a single grain.
Spot on, and that is exactly the mission of today's deep dive. We are looking at this radical theoretical framework from our sources called existence geometry, which is sometimes referred to as the mathematics of bent light.
Yeah, that's such a cool name for it.
It really is. And we're going to explore how fundamentally changing our core assumption about empty space could shift computation completely, moving away from that discrete, stepwise counting and toward, well, lightning fast, continuous field dynamics.
Which is huge, especially if you've been, tracking the bottlenecks in algorithmic complexity. This framework proposes a literal paradigm shift to solve mathematically intractable problems exponentially faster.
Okay, let's unpack this because the implications for computational speed are just massive, but the mechanics are, well, they're a little heavy.
They definitely take a minute to wrap your head around.
So standard physics usually operates on this assumption that space is just a void, right? An empty background that's dependent on particles or objects to occupy it.
Right, the classic Newtonian stage.
But existence geometry just discards that void completely. It assumes everything exists. Every single coordinate, every tiny infinitesimal point in a given space has an intrinsic existence density.
Which the sources represent with a scalar field, phi. So basically, everything is just a fluctuation in this phi field.
Okay, so why does that matter for math? Right now, to simulate a complex system, let's say an n-body gravitational simulation for galaxy formation, we rely on discrete particles.
Yeah, you have to calculate the interaction between mass A and mass B, then A and C, then B and C, and update all those vectors at every single time step.
Which means as the number of elements grows, your computational cost just explodes exponentially.
The dreaded combinatorial explosion. But under what they call the existence computation thesis, you bypass that entirely. Mass, gravity, particle interactions, they aren't fundamental variables in this math anymore.
But they aren't.
No, they are emergent properties of high existence density. You don't track the discrete elements to calculate the field. You only compute the scalar field phi itself,
Right.
specifically, its gradient.
Ah, okay. So it's like moving from tracking every single car in a traffic jam, noting every lane change and brake tap to model the congestion, to just looking at a heat map of traffic density.
That's a really good analogy.
Yeah.
The heat map holds up perfectly conceptually. The traffic density heat map is treated as the fundamental reality, and the cars are just the local phenomena we observe at those high density points.
But I have to push back a little on the hardware reality of this.
Sure, go for it.
Mathematically, computing the gradient of a continuous field like calculating del phi that still requires us to discretize that space if we are running it on a standard von Neumann architecture, right?
You're not wrong, because you're just replacing a particle mesh with a finite element mesh. To get high resolution, your grid size shrinks and your computational costs just skyrockets right back to exponential territory. So where is the actual physical speed up? Okay, you're entirely right if we try to force this math onto standard digital hardware. Existence geometry isn't designed to be approximated on silicon using floating point arithmetic.
Oh, so it requires completely different hardware.
Exactly. The speedup comes from physical computation.
Yep.
You collapse that exponential complexity into linear or polynomial time by utilizing an analog or neuromorphic substrate.
Neuromorphic, okay.
Yeah, where the physical voltage, or maybe photonic intensity, literally is the field phi. The system naturally settles into the gradient without doing any discrete arithmetic at all.
Wow. So the field dynamics replace the algorithmic search because the hardware natively behaves as a continuous field.
Precisely. And once you have a substrate that evaluates existence geometry natively like that, you can target the specific focus of this framework, which is turbocharging primality testing.
Which, for you listening, is the absolute holy grail for cryptography. Breaking down a massive RSA key relies entirely on the fact that factoring large numbers or finding massive primes is just computationally brutal.
It's a massive slog. Standard sieve methods, or the general number field sieve, they all run up against this hard limit of square root of n time complexity.
It's back to picking up grains of sand on the beach.
Exactly. Mm. But existence geometry applies continuous field dynamics to primality by utilizing something pretty famous, the Riemann zeta function.
Okay, normally evaluating the zeta function analytically is notoriously difficult.
Right, but in this framework, the zeta function acts directly as an existence oscillator.
Walk me through the mechanics of that. How exactly does the zeta function oscillate existence density?
So the existence density of any given integer, or phi value, is defined here as being inversely proportional to the zeta function evaluated at that integer.
I see.
And because prime numbers are the indivisible building blocks of the integers, the existence density naturally aggregates right at the primes.
Meaning in this continuous field, primes aren't random discrete anomalies.
No, not at all. They are the deterministic local maxima of the existence density field.
Wait, so they're essentially the standing waves on our beach.
That is exactly what they are. And this leads to the framework's primary computational mechanism, which is deterministic phase reading.
Phase reading, so no division.
None. If you want to know if a massive number is prime, you completely bypass division. You just evaluate the oscillation phase of the zeta function at that coordinate.
And according to the sources, if the phase is exactly pi, which corresponds to a negative real number, it's prime. But if the phase is zero, it's composite.
Right. You are just checking the resonance. And by doing that, the complexity drops from O of square root of n all the way down to O of log n.
Okay. Conceptually, that is so much like acoustic resonance.
How do you mean?
Like, instead of recording a complex dissonant chord, running a massive Fourier transform, and digitally dissecting every frequency to see if one specific harmonic is buried in the data, we just blast the chord into a resonant chamber tuned to that specific frequency.
Well, I love that.
Right. If the chamber physically rings, the note is there. We don't have to dismantle the chord at all.
The acoustic resonance analogy is structurally perfect. You are quite literally reading the geometric resonance of existence itself.
Oh, wait, I have another technical question here.
Bring it on.
Even if we're not dividing, evaluating the zeta function at the scale of, say, a 4096-bit integer requires immense precision. Standard numerical analysis tells us that the precision required to avoid a floating point error at that scale would completely negate the O of log n speedup.
Oh, absolutely. The overhead would be absurd.
Right, because if your phase calculation is off by a fraction of a decimal, a composite number suddenly looks prime. So how does existence geometry guarantee exact phase locking without drowning in precision overhead?
That is the beauty of mapping it to a continuous density field. You aren't calculating an approximation out to billions of decimal places, you're measuring a topological phase.
Topological phase. Okay.
Yeah. In existence geometry, the phase states of pi and zero aren't floating point approximations. They are discrete topological invariants.
So they're baked into the geometry.
It's exactly. A physical system designed around the existence oscillator doesn't have to calculate the difference between 3.14159 and 3.14158. It physically snaps to the topological state of the limit cycle. It's phase locked by the geometry of the field itself.
That is incredible. So the error correction is handled by the physics of the field, not by software algorithm.
You've got it. And once you understand that this framework treats complex data as topological phases in a scalar field, we can address the ultimate stress tests for any computational theory.
Let me guess, quantum superposition and NP hard problems.
Big ones, yep.
Here's where it gets really interesting, especially for quantum mechanics. The entire reason we use quantum algorithms like Shor's or Grover's is to leverage superposition.
To process multiple states at once, yeah.
But mathematically, tracking those overlapping states requires massive tensor products. For n qubits, your computational cost scales at O of 2 to the power of n. It requires a multidimensional Hilbert space that just grows exponentially just to keep track of the probabilities.
And existence geometry just neatly bypasses this entire nightmare by ignoring the collapse postulate entirely.
Which feels like total heresy in standard quantum mechanics. You're just tossing out wave function collapse.
Completely throwing it out. The core axiom here is that everything that can exist does exist simultaneously within the Phi field.
Wow. Okay.
So overlapping quantum states don't require this exponentially growing Hilbert space to map diverging probabilities. They utilize what the text calls existence algebra specifically, an existential direct sum.
But if you just linearly sum all those entangled quantum states into a single scalar field, don't you destroy the relational data?
That's the common fear, yes.
Because the phase relationships between entangled qubits are where the actual computational power lives. If you mash them all into one direct sum, aren't you just creating a noisy, unreadable soup of density?
It would be unreadable, definitely, if you were trying to extract discrete particle vectors out of it. But again, existence algebra reads the gradients.
The gradients again.
Right. When you apply an existential direct sum, the states stack directly on top of each other in the exact same physical region. The interference patterns between those states create the gradient.
I see.
So you preserve the relational data mathematically by operating on the topography of the field.
Yeah.
And that reduces the computational cost from exponential down to linear O of n.
That is so elegant. So you aren't trying to pull one specific parallel universe out of the stack. You're just measuring the thickness of the stack itself.
Exactly. And that topological approach is exactly how the framework reframes the P versus NP problem.
Oh, man, the P versus NP problem, the absolute holy grail of mathematics, the barrier between polynomial time stuff we can solve quickly and exponential time, stuff that basically takes forever.
Right. And existence geometry states that NP hardness isn't actually an algorithmic failure at all. It is an existence density barrier.
Okay, help me visualize this. Let's look at standard gradient descent. If you have a P problem, your algorithm is essentially placed on a physical hill. You calculate the slope, the gradient, and you just easily walk down to the bottom, the global minimum.
Receive forward, yes.
But an NP hard problem, like the traveling salesperson problem, is notoriously non-convex. It's like being dropped into this jagged, chaotic landscape filled with millions of local valleys. If you just blindly follow a gradient down, you get trapped in a suboptimal valley immediately.
You get stuck, yeah.
So how does this existence gradient Delphi actually avoid getting stuck?
Because Delphi isn't mapping the fitness of the solution. This is a super critical distinction to make. In standard optimization, the landscape represents the cost function.
Right.
But in existence geometry, the landscape represents the existence density of the state space itself.
Oh, so it's not mapping the quality or cost of the answer at all. It's mapping the physical probability of the configuration.
Yes. The mathematical proofs in our sources argue that if the existence field gradient, Delphi, is non-zero, the space is globally navigable in polynomial time.
That completely flips the problem.
It really does. P versus NP becomes a question of physical gradient detection in the Phi field. If the existence landscape is perfectly flat, meaning there is literally zero gradient directing the state space toward a higher density configuration, then the problem is NP hard.
You are basically blind in a perfectly flat desert. There is no slope to guide you.
Exactly. But if Delphi is non-zero, the field naturally flows toward the solution, totally bypassing those local minima because the flow isn't dictated by cost. It's dictated by existence density.
That is wild. The framework just converts computational complexity into a strictly topological property.
It changes everything about how we look at hard problems.
But what happens when the topology itself breaks down? Because if we are relying on these smooth gradients to solve mathematical complexities, what does this continuous field do when it hits a wall that logic dictates simply cannot be solved?
You're talking about structural paradoxes.
Exactly. How does existence geometry handle paradoxes? Like, we have to talk about Kurt Gödel's incompleteness theorems here.
No, we definitely do.
For you listening, Gödel proved that any sufficiently complex mathematical system will contain statements that are undeniably true, but fundamentally unprovable within the system's own rules. A standard discrete algorithm trying to prove a Gödel sentence just enters an infinite search loop and completely crashes.
Right, because standard Boolean logic gets trapped.
Yeah.
It demands a static binary label. It requires every single statement to resolve to either a one or zero.
Like the Liar's Paradox, this statement is false. It forces a computer to wildly oscillate between true and false infinitely.
Exactly. So how does the mathematics of bent light handle a statement that oscillates infinitely?
Yeah, does it just crash?
No, it accepts the oscillation as the answer itself. In this framework, truth is not a static point. It is a trajectory.
Truth is a trajectory. I like that.
The sources introduce this mechanism called the light bending operator. When this operator processes a self-referential paradox, it doesn't try to force a binary 1 or 0 resolution. It maps the trajectory of the logic and identifies it as a natural closed loop.
A closed loop, like what the sources call a limit cycle.
Exactly that. A limit cycle in dynamical systems is just an isolated closed trajectory. Think of it like an orbit. The light bending operator recognizes the paradox not as a computational failure, but as a stable, O of one fixed point in the geometry of the field.
That is genuinely fascinating. So the system doesn't crash at all. It just looks at the paradox and says, oh, this statement is an orbit. The paradox is resolved as a dynamic topological feature. The math just watches it spin.
Right. It naturally incorporates the geometry of self-reference. The logic doesn't break. The shape of the logic simply curves back on itself.
Okay, so synthesizing all of this, existence geometry completely abandons the discrete atomized view of computation. We aren't picking through grains of sand anymore.
Not at all.
By evaluating the universe as this continuous field of existence density, Phius, we are fundamentally changing the speed limit of math. Primality testing bypasses that O of square root of n division by reading the acoustic-like resonance phase of the zeta function.
Down to O of log n.
Right. And quantum algorithms abandon those exponential tensor products for linear existential direct sums. NP hardness is revealed to be a flat topology of existence density rather than just an algorithmic failing. And Gödel's logical paradoxes are just stable limit cycles in the field.
It is a total reconstruction of how we view mathematical reality from the ground up. And, you know, it leads to one final, deeply profound theorem presented in the sources regarding the nature of the observer.
Well, this is the application to consciousness, right?
Yes. If mathematical paradoxes, these self-referential loops that observe themselves, are simply stable limit cycles in the existence field, the sources propose that the human mind is precisely the same topological structure.
Meaning the hard problem of consciousness is literally just geometry.
Think about the subjective experience of consciousness, the feeling of you observing the world and simultaneously observing yourself observing the world. It is the ultimate self-referential paradox.
It really is when you phrase it like that.
The text suggests that human consciousness is simply a highly complex, stable limit cycle in the neural existence field. It is a localized anomaly where the phi field curves deeply enough to actually observe its own trajectory.
So you are basically a paradox that's stabilized.
Exactly. Consciousness isn't something generated by the brain's computation. It is the topological shape of the existence density within it.
Man, that blows my mind. So for you listening, the next time you find yourself standing on a massive beach, looking out at the water and getting lost in your own thoughts, just remember that according to existence geometry, you aren't a discrete machine searching for meaning in an empty universe. You are the universe's density field, curving back on itself just to watch the waves. Definitely something for you to ponder.